Just wait 3 days.
I guess most of us probably don't give too much thought to the matter of the time period between our Lord's death and his resurrection. Not that we haven't come to any conclusion about it. I think most of us have, after some study, perhaps a lot of study, come to a conclusion, and we've settled on the opinion that this length of time between our Lord's death and his resurrection was parts of 3 days and three nights, and not three full days and nights. However, every so often the argument is revived, and some feel that Jesus must have been in the tomb for a full 3 days and a full three nights. And a recent suggestion along this line caused me to go over it again, and I found an additional blessing in it, plus an associated lesson which I had not thought of before. Now, one of the chief reasons for people thinking that Jesus had to be in the heart of the earth for these full 3 days and nights is found in Matthew 12, verse 40. And there it says, "For as Jonah was 3 days and nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Now, in order for this to be so, Jesus would have had to die on a Wednesday night and then be raised from the dead on the first day of the week. Now, the only nearby year in which Nisan 14 fell on a Wednesday was in the year AD 34, on March the 24th. But this cannot be reconciled with the known dates of Herod, John the Baptist, and the joint high priest Annas and Caiaphas. So that would seem to be one argument against this thought that Jesus had to be in the heart of the earth for three full days and three full nights. And various authorities have already decided that, in harmony with our own feeling, that it's parts of 3 days and three nights. But in addition, you'll recall that the early church always celebrated the first day of the week as being the proper time to commemorate the resurrection of Jesus, and that's very significant. Who would know better than those of the early church which date was correct? But then what do we do about this text in Matthew 4:12, verse 40? We can't ignore it or dismiss it, or can we? Is there an explanation? Now, there are 11 texts which clearly indicate that Jesus was to rise again during a span of 3 days or before the third day ended. And I'm just going to list them for you. I'm going to read one, but I'll list these 11 texts for you if you like to take notes. There are three in Matthew. Chapter 16, 21 is the first. Chapter 17, verse 23. And chapter 20, verse 19. There are two in Mark. Mark 9:31 and 10:34, 4 in Luke, chapter 9:22, chapter 18:33, chapter 24, verse 7, and then chapter 24, verse 46. There's one in Acts, chapter 10, verse 40, and then one in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 4. We're just going to read one to show how clear it is. And this is the one from Matthew 16, 21. It says, from that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must be killed and be raised again the third day. Now there is one exception in Mark 8:31, which instead of on the third day has inserted after the third day. However, this particular event that Mark 8:31 refers to is in Matthew 16:21, which we just read, and also in Luke 9:22, and both of these use the thought of the third day, of Jesus being raised on that third day. So he couldn't have had three full days and nights in the heart of the earth. So it seems reasonable to accept the two against one versions, the two in Matthew and Luke against the one in Mark. Therefore, we have this matter of two witnesses against one. Now, another instance where the word after is used is in Matthew 27, verses 63 to 64. That describes the priest speaking to Pilate and saying that we remember that the deceiver said while he was yet alive, after 3 days, I will rise again. And they said, command therefore that the sepulcher be made sure until the third day. Now this is kind of interesting as you read the text, because it seems like they're contradicting each other or having a double thought. First saying that he said he was going to rise after the third day, but then only asking the pilot to place a guard only until the third day. And the logical conclusion is that the Matthew account may have suffered an error, and that until the third day was the actual thought that was expressed. Now the other remaining text is the one of the account of the two on the way to Emmaus. You remember when they told Jesus, not knowing that who he was, thinking he was just a stranger, that today is the third day since these things were done, thus supporting the general thought that this period should be parts of 3 days and nights. And incidentally, the argument of three full days and nights has a problem with another text, one in Mark 16:9, where it says, now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene. This text would mean that Jesus would have spent 3 days and four nights in the grave. And some might say that Jesus could have risen shortly after Saturday ended, after 6 p.m., thus making it only 3 days and three nights. But in the light of all these other texts, it seems unlikely that this would ensure the other argument to be so. In the second place, these verses are generally considered not in the original, according to the Diaglot, the Revised Version, the American Standard also, and others. But we still have to come back to Matthew 12:39-40, and we're going to read that, because before we didn't read verse 39. Okay, Matthew 12:39-40. But he answered and said unto them, an evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given to it but the sign of the prophet Jonas. For as Jonas was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Now, you know, sometimes we skip over a curious part of this expression as it is given. The part of the text that reads, the heart of the earth. Now, if this is literal, it is hardly feasible that Jesus expected to be translated several thousand miles into the earth's core. Such an expression isn't used of the grave anywhere else. And the Greek word for the heart of the earth, the word heart, is not used for the midst of the earth, even if it did mean that, we notice that Jesus was not buried either in the heart of the earth or in the midst of the earth. He was buried in Joseph's tomb, which, according to various descriptions of it, lies several feet above the surface of the earth. So it means that we must interpret this portion of the statement. Now, if we must or if we are allowed to interpret this portion of the statement, we also should be able to interpret other portions to fit other statements and the facts of the time of the resurrection. Now, another interesting thing comes to light when we compare the statement in Matthew with other records of the same event by Luke. And this is in Luke 11, and we're going to read verses 16, 29, and 30. Luke 11, 16, 29, and 30. And others, tempting him, sought of him a sign from heaven. And when the people were gathered thick together, he began to say, "This is an evil generation. They seek a sign, and there shall no sign be given it, but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For as Jonah was a sign unto the Ninevites, so shall also the Son of Man be to this generation." Now you notice that Luke leaves out or changes what is to be the sign that will be given. Matthew says that the sign will be the 3 days and three nights in the grave. But the Luke account says that the sign was simply to be that Jonah preached to the Ninevites and they repented. And as we read the account of Jonah, there is no evidence that the Ninevites ever knew of Jonah being in the belly of the whale for 3 days and nights. And Jesus' statement, as it's recorded in Luke, is in harmony with the record of Jonah. It was Jonah's preaching that is compared to Jesus' preaching that will be done in the kingdom when they are raised from the dead. We'll read Luke 11, 32. And it says, "The men of Nineveh shall rise up in the judgment with this generation and shall condemn it. For they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, a greater than Jonah is here." So this is what's being compared and being provided as a sign. And the sign was not to be given then. It was to be given when the Ninevites would be raised from the dead. Now, Matthew also records this part of the statement about the Ninevites in Matthew 12, 41. It's almost identical, which says, "The men of Nineveh shall rise in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, a greater than Jonah is here." It's about exactly the same. So what do we do? All the oldest manuscripts do have Matthew 12:40 in it. So we can't say that it's not in the older text. And one suggestion is that Matthew's account was originally in the Aramaic, so that the Greek text is a translation. And the question is asked, could it be that the original did not have verse 40 in it about the 3 days and nights? That is in the Aramaic. And that it was inserted by a copyist explaining the sign of what he thought the sign of Jonah would be. Now, we cannot say that positively. And Jesus himself, you know, on a later occasion, had a chance to insert this thought about 3 days and nights, but he didn't do it. In Matthew 16, verse 4, he speaks. Said, "There shall be no sign given it, but the sign of the prophet Jonah." It says, "He left them and departed." Now, if he meant that the sign was going to be 3 days and three nights, he could have said it there, but he didn't. He just said, "There's going to be a sign given it," and then he ups and leaves. And in Mark 8:12, we have an almost identical statement as is found in Matthew 16. There shall no sign be given to this generation. And it says, he left them. Now, if a choice has to be made, it seems there's a more scriptural authority to hold to the opinion that this period of time was parts of 3 days and nights rather than 3 full days and nights. Now, I couldn't help but wonder why God so planned this event to have this waiting period. If the problem was not to interfere with the Sabbath day, why not raise Jesus immediately after he died? After all, the last members of the church are so raised in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, according to the Apostle Paul. But evidently, God had some special reason for it. Or it may be there is a lesson for us in this seeming delay, as there was a lesson for the early followers of Jesus. After rising, you know, to the very highest heights of anticipation, expecting Jesus to be hailed as a king, and they themselves being placed in positions of great honor in that kingdom, and we remember how two of them had approached Jesus asking to have one sit on the left and one sit on the right in his kingdom when it was established, and another time they argued as to who would be the greatest. And now all their hopes were dashed to the lowest of the low. The one who was to be their king was dead. Now they were just fishermen again. You know, to be asked to step down one step is bearable. We could all step down one step in our place in life. But to step down from the very peak of the mountaintop down to the valley, in the lowest valley that there could possibly be, is another thing. It was a shock of the worst kind. The period of waiting, just 3 days, must have been very trying to the soul of each one. Now, they should have remembered that he had told them many times that this would happen, and that he would be raised from the dead on the third day, but they seemed to have forgotten it. They still remained in close touch with one another, which was good. They didn't scatter, but they had forgotten the 3 days. And in trying to find the lesson for ourselves, I couldn't help but think of another occasion, a similar period being sort of imposed on the people of Israel. This number 3 is prominent in that regard. And we find the account of it in Exodus, the 19th chapter. In verse 1, we read, in the third month, when the children of Israel were going forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Zion, of Sinai. Now here we have that number 3, but it's 3 months. And then as we read the first eight verses, we see a similarity of events between God and Israel as it was between Jesus and the disciples. Here we have Israel on the top of the mountain emotionally. They have been delivered from a life of slavery in Egypt to freedom by miracle after miracle. Moses, their leader, had proven that God was with him. The Red Sea had been crossed while a miracle held back the waters. And yet when their pursuers had ventured to follow them, they were overcome with water and perished. Now this certainly could very well match the experiences of the disciples with Jesus. He performed miracle after miracle. He proved that God was with him, was even hailed as the new leader of Israel, and the people were ready to make him a king. So far the two accounts have a definite similarity. Then we're going to keep on reading in Exodus 19, read verses 9 to 11. And the Lord said to Moses, "Lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever." And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day, for the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai." Now we're going to read verses 15 to 18. "And he said unto the people, Be ready against the third day. Come not at your wives. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly." Now the scene now shows us God instructing Moses that on the third day something important was going to happen. The people are to make certain preparations for this third day. And the third day comes, and God arrives on the scene, and it says the mountain quakes greatly. Now imagine being there at this scene. Here you've got a mountain that's starting to quake and shake. There's fire. There's smoke, as the smoke of a furnace. And then you hear this trumpet, the sound of a trumpet that gets louder and louder. And the people are fearful. From the description, it's a scene of a mountain ready to blow up and destroy the people. Well, Moses goes up into the mountain, and as a result of all this, he gets the law, and now Israel's relationship is changed. Now, prior to this time, God dealt with the leaders of the people and the people also on the basis of a promise to Abraham. But now all this has changed. The basis of their relationship with God now is to obey the law. And they agree to do it. And so, at Jesus' death and resurrection on the third day, there was also a change in the relationship of the people with God. The basis was now to be faith in Jesus and an acceptance of a new and living way. And then just as Moses went up into the mount, so Jesus went into heaven itself to appear in the presence of God for us. Then the Holy Spirit came at Pentecost, and ever since that time, it has enlightened the people of God and directed their paths, given them a new hope for a new life grander than anything the people of Israel ever dreamed about. Perhaps the period of time, parts of 3 days, however, was intended to cause us to recall another lesson that took place with Israel. Perhaps that's the reason. It was a changeover time for Israel in both instances. And now we have a different basis for a relationship with God. Now that's just a suggestion. Now another suggestion is that these parts of 3 days were intended to be a figure of the fact that after parts of 3 1,000-year-long days, there would be another change of great importance. The change from the calling out of the church to a new covenant, which was to bless all mankind with Christ and his church, doing the work of helping mankind rid themselves of sin and bring them back into harmony with God. And just as a change occurred from that period of time where it was a more or less a let your conscience be your guide relationship, then a change to the law, so now we have this third change in this third 1,000-year day from the time when Jesus died and was raised from the dead. And we are now in that third 1,000-year day from that time of the death of Jesus and his resurrection. If our chronology is even close to being right, why, we have over 4,100, or someplace in the area of 4,161 years since the creation of Adam. And so we're in the early stages of the 5,000-year day, then the 6,000-year day has taken place, and we're in the beginning of this third day of waiting period. So that's just another suggestion as to what was meant by this waiting period of 3 days. Why have it, and what would be the reason for it? Now, if none of these thoughts are right, and if they don't appeal to you, that's all right too. But I think we can get another couple of lessons from this experience of just waiting for 3 days. One lesson that I get from it is that, you know, the disciples weren't listening too well to Jesus when he spoke. Here we have 11 scriptures showing us that Jesus spoke of the nearness of his death and then being raised the third day, and yet they were so absorbed with this thought of Jesus as a king and what their position would be, where they would sit, who they would, which one of these corrupt officials they would immediately put into jail, and all these things that they were thinking about kind of made them forget what Jesus had told them about his death and resurrection, went in one ear and out the other, evidently. And so we have to kind of listen when people talk to us. You know, they just might be saying something very important. And I think this is part of the lesson that I kind of think kind of attaches itself to the lesson of Jesus telling them all these times that they must wait for 3 days, and then they forgot all about it. So let's listen when other people speak to us. Now, another little lesson that comes to mind is that one of the lessons in just waiting 3 days can make a great change in the way things may appear to us. Let me tell you a little story. A flower lady was smiling as she sold her flowers, and her wrinkled old face was just alive with joy. And a man walked up to her and picked out a flower. And he said to her, "You look happy this morning." She says, "Why not? Everything is good." But she was dressed so shabbily and seemed so frail that her reply startled the man. And he said, "You wear your troubles well." And she said, "Well, when Jesus was crucified on Good Friday, that was the worst day in the history of mankind." Then she said, "3 days later came Easter." So she said, "When I get into trouble," she says, "I've learned to wait 3 days, and somehow everything seems to get all right again." Now, you know, if a little old flower lady can say that, so can we. I'm sure that you've had experiences that you look back upon and see that this kind of works. Let a little period of time go by and things change. Have you ever gotten mad at your boss? I mean, really angry? Maybe you said some things that you wish you hadn't said. And then a little while later, perhaps not even 3 days later, things appeared different. And then you had to go back and apologize. Shirley's been very good about that. Forgiving and forgetting. But one thing we have to remember about anger, anger is only one letter short of danger. One of the brethren, I think it was Brother Gorecki, once said that in a discussion, if you find the tone of your voice raising, it's time to stop talking or at least slow down. You know, anytime we find anger, let's remember that danger is only one letter away. And that anger can destroy in 1 minute what took many years to build and put together. Many people can take things apart, analyze bits of this and that, and gain a lot of knowledge from that. But wisdom comes by putting things together. And that's especially true in spiritual matters. Attitudes can change if we give them time and use time to put them together. Not spend time to dissect and suspect others' motives. You know, Paul in Titus, the first chapter, verse 15, says, to the pure, all things are pure. But unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. But even their mind and conscience is defiled. And if we find ourselves habitually thinking that others are not pure, that should be a danger signal to us. We should spend our time building and not tearing apart, and make a habit of building. William S. Knudsen was a president of General Motors back in 1927. And I read a little story about him. He told his son that if he got good grades, you know, graduating from high school, he would give him a new car. So the young man got the required good grades. So Knudsen told the son to go to the plant and get his car. He went to the plant and he went into this room, and there it was in several thousand pieces. He said, put it together and it's yours. He put it together in 2 or 3 months. But he learned wisdom in so doing. And we can do that with many other things, but especially in the spiritual things. Perhaps one of the brethren has said things that weren't exactly so. And our first reaction is to strike back with equally wild words. Why not try to just wait 3 days? And see if that doesn't make it all right. At least both parties then have a chance to consider what has been said, and perhaps we may have misunderstood or been misunderstood. Now we're all cooled off, and we can approach the matter calmly and get it all fixed up. May God help us to take time to wait 3 days. If necessary, even longer. And we'll see that matters are seen in a different light, and all will be well. Take time to be holy. Speak oft with thy Lord. Abide in him always, and feed on his word. Make friends of God's children, and help those that are weak. forgetting in nothing his blessing to seek. Take time to be holy. The world rushes on. Spend much time in secret with Jesus alone. And by looking to Jesus, like him thou shalt be. And thy friends in thy conduct his likeness shall see. Take time to be holy. Let him be your guide. Take time to be holy. Be calm in thy soul. Each thought and each motive beneath his control. And thus led by his Spirit to fountains of love, thou soon shalt be fitted for service above. May the Lord help us and guide us by his Spirit thus to do. Just wait 3 days. Amen.